This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. During the 9/11 Commission's hearing on borders, transportation, and managing risk, Executive Director Philip Zelikow questioned why more of the terrorists weren't caught.
Considered collectively, the 9/11 hijackers included among them known al-Qaeda operatives who could have been watchlisted, presented passports manipulated in a fraudulent manner, presented passports with suspicious indicators of extremism, made detectable false statements on their visa applications, were pulled out of the travel stream and given greater scrutiny by border officials, made false statements to border officials to gain entry to the United States, and violated immigration laws while inside the United States. These circumstances offered opportunities to intelligence and law enforcement officials, but our government did not fully exploit al-Qaeda's travel vulnerabilities. Why weren't they exploited? We do not have all the answers.
Today on Capitol Hill, members of the 9/11 Commission met with the Senate Judiciary Committee to discuss how to better secure our borders. The Commission report recommends biometric passports, federal standards for driver's licenses, better computers, better training, better screening. Will all of these measures be implemented? How much will they cost? And how do we safeguard our civil liberties in the process? Later in the program, an update on the fighting in Najaf and John Kerry counterattacks. But first, today we begin a series of programs on the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission, and we start with border and transportation security. If you work in the travel industry, if you're an advocate for immigration rights, if you interview people as they enter the country or patrol our borders, give us a call. What improvements have you seen since 9/11? What still needs to be done? Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. Philip Zelikow, who you just heard, the executive director of the 9/11 Commission, joins us now by phone from Colorado. Welcome to Talk of the Nation.
Thank you.
I wanted to ask you, the report, commission report really focuses in a lot of defensive areas. There is one proactive thing on border security that the commission report talks about, the small terrorist travel intelligence collection and analysis program currently in place has produced disproportionately useful results. You write, it should be expanded. Tell us a little bit about that program, who runs it, and how should it be expanded?
It's a sensitive program, which we can't discuss very much openly, but here's what it does. It tries to systematically analyze the travel documents used by terrorists and find telltale signs of how terrorists doctor their documents to travel and other ways in which they travel, that if you then pull those out and develop kind of a list of these telltale indicators, it turns out that they are very powerful ways of identifying potential terrorists. If I can explain for a moment, international travel is something to which al-Qaeda operatives and other international terrorists give enormous amounts of time. This is really important to them. Khalid Sheikh Mohammed and others spend a lot of time on this. And the reason it is when they're hiding in their slum in Karachi, people don't know where they are. When they travel, they have to basically go through defined channels in which they have to present themselves in front of government officials. These are periods of extraordinary danger and vulnerability for them before they can submerge again into anonymous communities at their destination. And so travel is something that is an extraordinary moment of vulnerability for them and an extraordinary moment of opportunity for counterterrorists.
You report, the report says for terrorists, travel documents are as important as weapons, and you recommend a lot of technological upgrades in all kinds of travel documents.
Yes, I mean, we found, and this is true when you read the reports of the interrogations of terrorists, just how much they talk about travel issues. Travel problems had more of an impact on the 9/11 plot than any other external factor. It determined how many attackers would take part in the attack and may have even determined the scale of the attack. Just the sheer difficulty of some of their people in getting visas or getting appropriate travel documents. They used so many Saudis was because Saudis could readily get visas to come to the United States.
As you look at some of the other recommendations, though, they're very controversial. You recommend biometrics to be incorporated into passports and visas, that sort of thing. Also, very controversially, a national or federal standards for documents like driver's licenses that are used every day for identification inside the United States.
Yeah, let me clarify. What we recommend are uniform federal standards for what the sources of identification. This is not a national identification card. But instead what happens is people manipulate and manufacture the sources of identification, what people call feeder documents, like birth certificates or other things that try to that you use in order to get a passport. If you can, in essence, people use passports the way you use credit cards, except credit cards carry around with them electronic information about your finances. And in many cases, passports are just simply pieces of paper that are no different now than they were 100 years ago. And what the Al-Qaeda operatives would do is they would destroy their travel histories simply by throwing a passport in the wastebasket and going and getting a new passport, and presto, all their travel history had disappeared. It's as if you could change your credit history by throwing a credit card in the garbage can and just getting a new one, and all your debt goes away. No one would accept that for credit cards, and neither I nor the commissioners could see why we should accept an inferior standard for the identification that's so key for our security.
The other thing is, there's a lot of other things, but one more before we talk to Asa Hutchinson, the Undersecretary of, who's on the line with us right now. But I did want to say that a lot of this seems to depend on greatly upgraded computers and databases to connect all of this information one to another so that an immigration officer in Seattle knows that somebody in Washington has flagged somebody.
You're absolutely right about that. And the interconnection between a lot of our recommendations is one of the reasons that we call for some of the comprehensive organizational fixes, too. It's very hard for the Department of Homeland Security to solve, that Asa Hutchinson is from, to solve all these problems just in his own agency, although there are some important initiatives that they need to pursue there, as I think he'll explain. But a lot of the information sharing goes beyond one agency, and so you're going to need presidential leadership to get the kind of information sharing solutions that are needed.
And the money required to spend on all of these computer systems as well. Stay with us, fellow.
It will be substantial.
It will be substantial. Stay with us. And joining us now is Asa Hutchinson, and he's at the Department of Homeland Security, where he's Undersecretary for Border and Transportation Security. And he's with us by phone from his office here in Washington. It's good to have you back on the program.
Good to be with you.
In your testimony before the Senate Judiciary Committee today, you noted significant progress has been made to protect America's border against future attacks. How does that square with some of these recommendations of the 9/11 Commission?
Well, I think very consistently, certainly the 9/11 Commission looked at what more needs to be done, but they did recognize that, for example, in our border security system, they advocated an entry-exit system where we could track our international visitors entering and leaving, they really asked for an acceleration of what we've already started. We have our U.S. visit system, which is the first time in history where we can biometrically confirm the identity of foreign travelers. This was established after 9/11. We have it in our airports and seaports. It clearly needs to be expanded, and they say that we should accelerate that.
It's in some airports and seaports.
Well, actually, it's in 115 international airports, which are all the international airports. So right now, I mean, for example, since January 5, we've processed over 7 million international visitors by taking their fingerprint. This is a capacity that we did not have before the creation of the Department of Homeland Security. We do need to expand this to our land borders, which we're scheduled to do by the end of this year. But we have to make it comprehensive. It's going to require a substantial investment of money. But, for example, right now, we have someone apply for a visa in Russia. The State Department will take that fingerprint. We will immediately have it at our port of entry so that we can confirm their identity when they come in. We've never had that capacity before.
At the same time, the number of visa applications to the United States is down, substantially down, as people might expect from the Middle East. Are some of these security measures thwarting tourists or deterring them from coming to the United States?
Certainly, we are in transition right now, and after 9/11, because of the security enhancements, our visa applications were reduced in some parts of the world. They've actually started to come back up, but we've got to reconvince the world that America still is a welcoming nation and that these security measures are also designed to help facilitate travel and will not be burdensome on all the millions of international guests that are here for legitimate reasons. So that is something that we need to do as well.
Asa Hutchinson is our guest. He's Undersecretary for Border and Transportation Security at the Department of Homeland Security. If you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255. You can also send us email, totn@npr.org. And let's talk with Sewell, who's with us on the phone from Rock Springs, Wyoming.
Yeah, first of all, I haven't read all the 9/11 reports, but I'm a judge, a working judge. And I'm in the southwest corner of Wyoming. We have an influx of Mexicans, Hispanics. One of the problems we've run into is that you have a memorandum from ICE, which used to be INS,
mm-hmm.
That apparently indicates that the people in the INS, ICE are no longer going to be concerned with picking up individuals who appear in court on criminal violations unless they have been convicted of serious felonies. Now, my attitude is, and their comment is, it's lack of funds. And my attitude is, look, guys, this is a serious thing. Find the money somewhere, go back to Congress and get immediate appropriations.
Well, can we get a response from Asa Hutchinson? I'm not sure this is exactly your bailiwick, but go ahead.
Well, it is. And first of all, we do have to prioritize, and our highest priority would be to remove criminal illegal aliens from our country that pose a substantial risk. But we also are seriously engaged in worksite enforcement, in removals of others that are referred from local law enforcement that come to our attention through intelligence. And so we do act upon that. Obviously, as the caller noted, it is a significant issue, and the most important thing we can do is to make sure we can protect our borders so that we do not increase the illegal population, and also as we are committed to our interior enforcement responsibilities as well.
With the Homeland Security, is one of the departments that is getting more money this year rather than less. Is some of that money going to be going to solve this judge's problems?
Yes, in fact, it is. Our budget next year will have a $100 million increase in interior enforcement. We are increasing our detention space, which is critical for the apprehension of illegal aliens. And we're also improving our cooperation with local law enforcement. We can't do it all alone at the federal government level, so we're trying to partner with the state troopers out in the field, give them information when they come across those who are illegally here as well, to partner with us and help us to enforce these laws.
Sewell, thanks very much for the phone call, and good luck.
Thank you.
And we'll have more with Undersecretary Hutchinson when we come back from a short break. Again, if you'd like to join the conversation, our number is 800-989-8255, 800-989-TALK. You can email us, totn@npr.org. Also still with us is Philip Zelikow, the executive director of the 9/11 Commission. We'll be talking more with him as well. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. We're talking today about securing our borders, what the 9/11 Commission recommends, what the government says is already being done, and what still lies ahead. Of course, you're invited to join us. 800-989-8255 is our phone number. That's 800-989-TALK. The email address is totn@npr.org. With us by phone is Philip Zelikow, Executive Director of the 9/11 Commission, and now with us is Asa Hutchinson, Undersecretary for Border and Transportation Security at the Department of Homeland Security. He's with us by phone from his office here in Washington. And let's see if we can get another caller on the line. Barbara joins us from Palm Beach Garden.
Palm Beach Gardens.
In Florida. Go ahead.
My daughter has noticed that she was getting stopped at every airport, and they were searching her luggage and searching her and pulling her out. And we inquired and found out that she's on the list of suspected people. And so we said, well, why is she on it, and how do we get her off? And they said, you can't get her off, and we don't have to tell you why she's on it. So what do we do?
Probably she's not on it. I mean, if she's your daughter and she's no risk, then that means that her name is similar to one that is on it, and it's a case
That's
of...
That's what we were told. It's probably similar to a name, but we were told she is on the list.
Well, then... we have a TSA, or Transportation Security Administration, ombudsman that you can call, that your daughter can fill out information that we can verify that she's not the same one, and we'll actually enter a cleared name on the computer so that would not happen again.
So exactly how do we do that?
You should call. You probably can look on the TSA website and get that number off of there for the ombudsman and how to clear that name if you have a problem.
We did contact the ombudsman, and he told us that. He said there was no way to get her off.
Well, they can, if your daughter fills out the information, they can clear that so that it can go on there. Again, if there's a problem, you can...
Okay, so what's the website?
Well, it should be, I don't have it in front of me, it's TSA website. It should be fairly accessible.
Barbara, if you send us an email at totn@npr.org and say you were the caller, we'll find out the website for it and get a reply.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate the phone call, Barbara.
Bye.
I wanted to ask about the recommendation of the 9/11 Commission that has... not exactly. It's federal standards for driver's licenses, which some places find controversial. I wonder what the department's response is, and I wanted to add in an email we got from Jim in New London, Minnesota. Here in Minnesota, there's been a lot of resistance to putting visa expiration dates on driver's licenses. One legislator commented, immigration is the job of the federal government. Isn't national security the job of all parts of the government?
It is, and we need to have the assistance of the states. The commission recommended national standards for driver's license. We have been working with the State Association of Motor Vehicle Administrators. They're developing standards. The commission report gives us greater leverage to push harder on that. Clearly, that's a security vulnerability. There's over 260 different types of driver's license in the nation, and they have varying levels of security. The commission also recommended that United States citizens, when they travel abroad, ought to be expected to have a passport and a biometric. So that's a very aggressive recommendation that the commission made that should get some attention as well.
It also pointed out there are several parts of the world, Canada, Mexico, the Caribbean, where Americans can go without using a passport. That's a weakness, they said.
Well, it's a weakness because you can have a terrorist, for example, get a fake Pennsylvania or Arkansas or California driver's license and come back across the border and say, I'm a U.S. citizen, here's my driver's license. And then it's simply up to our inspector to know whether that driver's license is valid or not, and they don't have sufficient security measures in those. So both we need to strengthen driver's license, but also that's a debate that we will have if we move toward U.S. citizens carrying passports.
That's a huge other debate, and we'll reserve more on that for another day. I did want to ask you, though, in terms of the computer recommendations that are in the 9/11 Commission report, everybody wants new computer systems. Do you think these are necessary? How much will they cost? How quickly can they be up and running and doing the kind of job that they're needed to do?
Well, we're going to have to invest more in our IT systems. Right now, for example, our entry-exit U.S. visit system, we have made the databases talk to each other, so we have made them connected. But what we also have to do is to invest and upgrade those systems so that they operate better, more efficiently, and they are modernized, and that's going to take even more resources. So it's a couple steps we can take. We've made great progress in that, but more needs to be done, and Congress is going to have to consider how much additional funds they want to put into that.
Let's talk now with Jose. Jose's on the line from Oceanside, California.
Yes, how are you doing?
Very well, thanks.
Thanks for having me on.
Sure.
Yes, I'm a Border Patrol agent, and I work down here in the Oceanside area and also in the San Juan Capistrano area off the 5 freeway. And when we go out, we aren't allowed to catch illegal aliens that we know are illegal because our policy prevents us from doing that, Interior Patrol. The local police departments in the area want to turn over these illegals to us, the ones that are getting into trouble, not just somebody that's on their way to work, not just, you know, people that are behaving themselves, not getting into trouble. I'm talking about criminal gang member illegal aliens, and we're not allowed to catch them. They shot and killed a police officer down there in Oceanside last year, and we're still not allowed to go out and get them. This policy is just ridiculous, and I can't emphasize it more. Do you have any comment on that, Asa?
Well, certainly, when we have the reorganization, we have to have the Border Patrol concentrating on our borders and our transportation systems. Whenever we are apprehending 1 million through the great work of the men and women of the Border Patrol along our borders, that's got to be our first line of defense. So there has been a shift in responsibilities, but it has to be picked up by our interior enforcement responsibilities, which we remain committed to. And the Border Patrol has to help us out in that, but we want to coordinate it. One thing that the 9/11 Commission said is that our agencies have to coordinate better. And so
we're not allowed to do Interior Patrol. I will get in trouble from my supervisors if I go out and do my job. I literally will have days off without pay if I go out and catch illegal aliens. And that's wrong.
Well,
I'm a Latino. I'm in Central America. I'm a U.S. citizen now. I'm not racist at all. I want to go out and do my job. And we're not allowed to. We are literally held up in the station. If we bring in people from Interior Patrol, I will get in trouble. That is wrong.
Well,
I'm not taking people out of their jobs. I'm not going into kitchens and
Jose,
I'm getting people off the streets.
To be fair, I think we ought to give Asa Hutchinson a chance to respond.
We want the Border Patrol to do their job. The first responsibility is the borders of the United States, and this agent is talking about interior enforcement. And if they go out and they see illegal activity, obviously we want them to enforce the law. That's an operational issue with the chief of that station. We want them to enforce the law. The priority has to be the borders. And through this reorganization, we have a number of different responsible parties for the interior enforcement.
Jose, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Okay. And I know you have to go, but I did want to ask one last question before we let you off the air. The 9/11 Commission Vice Chairman Lee Hamilton said Monday, "The American public is becoming more and more agreeable to intrusiveness in order to protect themselves against terrorist attacks." How do you agree with that, first of all? And how do we work to protect civil liberties in these times?
I think I've always expressed it that the American people are willing to put up with some inconvenience to deal with security. I think perhaps some intrusion as well. But we clearly, as we create more databases, connect those databases, give the government more information and power, we have to have strong privacy protections. We have a chief privacy officer here in this department. The commission recommended even broader restrictions, a board that would be created. Obviously, that's something that has to be considered. But clearly, there has to be good checks and balances from the privacy side for the stronger role that government has to play in security.
Thanks very much for being with us today. We took a little bit more of your time than we promised. We appreciate it.
Good to be with you. Thank you.
Asa Hutchinson, Undersecretary for Border and Transportation Security in the Department of Homeland Security, joined us from his office here in Washington, D.C. Philip Zelikow is still with us. He was the Executive Director of the 9/11 Commission. I wondered, as you listened to Asa Hutchinson there, he obviously doesn't make all the executive decisions. He's pretty high up, but he doesn't get to appropriate the money, nor does he get to spend it.
No, he doesn't. And in a way, the commission is advocating a much larger architecture in which he only plays one part. This whole problem of how people get screened and what kind of IDs you have to show and confusing names and getting people identified biometrically, you can't just solve this at one point. People are getting checked for their IDs by a lot of different agencies in a lot of different settings. And what we really call for is to step back and see this as a system of systems and develop an overall architecture that's efficient. And so you don't hassle people where they don't need to be hassled, and you try to target your information so that you really try to screen people in the way that's most effective across the board, from visa application to port of entry to aircraft gate. And you say, what checks do we need in which places, presenting what kinds of identification, checked against what databases, with what kinds of civil liberties protection to go with that. We just need to conceptualize a whole different approach to how we ascertain who people are in an age where this is just critical to our national security, and we need to work with other countries and get them to participate in that architecture.
One of the things the commission report talks about is some of the responses to 9/11, and it, in places, it reads as if, due to calls by, among others, the media, the government felt an urgent need to do something, but did so without setting forth strategies, this grand architecture that you're talking about, for example, and just went off and did some things without really thinking about what it was they were doing or thinking it through.
Well, I'm afraid that's characteristic, and it's mostly conscientious people who are in a crisis. They mobilize their existing capacities to do what it is they know how to do more or better, and they surge. And then after you have that initial surge, that initial mobilization, and the landscape is transformed, then comes the moment where you pause and reflect and say, oh, boy, this is really a changed world we're living in. Let's think through how we really need to change our policies and adopt strategies for this different world. Well, we are now 3 years out of 9/11 at that moment. Now is the time to pause, reflect, evaluate, and really put in place strategies for how government should work, not just next year, but 5 and 10 and 15 years out, in thinking differently about the way we protect ourselves.
Philip Zelikow, thank you very much for being with us today. We appreciate it.
You're most welcome.
Philip Zelikow was Executive Director of the 9/11 Commission. He joined us on the phone from Colorado, where I understand he's taking some well-earned rest. We're talking about border security. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And joining us now to talk about how Congress is working to address the recommendations of the 9/11 Commission in this respect, Senator John Cornyn, Republican from Texas, also a member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and he joins us by phone from his office here in, his home here in Washington. Thanks very much for being on the program. Good to talk to you again.
Thanks, Neil. Good to be with you.
In a statement you released today, you said we have to understand that border security and immigration reform go hand in hand. In the report, the 9/11 Commission says the immigration system as a whole was widely viewed as increasingly dysfunctional, badly in need of reform. It didn't, in national security circles, however, only smuggling of weapons of mass destruction carried weight, not the entry of terrorists who might use such weapons or the presence of associated foreign-born terrorists. Is that the assumption you're going on there?
Well, today at a Judiciary Committee hearing where Asa Hutchinson and Lee Hamilton and another commissioner testified, They said that essentially we are bearing the bitter fruit of long years of neglect or even conscious disregard of our own immigration laws. And unfortunately, while the Department of Homeland Security is, I'm convinced, doing everything it can to catch up as fast as it can, there's a lot to do, and it's going to be a period of time, perhaps years, before we get to where we need to be.
9 million people in this country illegally, according to the 9/11 Commission report, another half a million or so every year.
That's right. And the truth is we probably don't know exactly because, of course, these are people who operate in the shadows in an underground economy, a cash economy, and who are afraid of the authorities finding out who they are. But one of the things that I was pleased to hear Vice Chairman Hamilton confirm, as did Secretary Hutchinson, is that we need to be able to make a distinction between people who are coming to the United States for beneficial or even just benign reasons and those who are coming here to try to kill us. And unless we're able to target our resources better, which is going to require immigration reform, and I have a proposal, specific proposal, with regard to a temporary worker program, we're simply not going to be able to do it for the reasons you mentioned. We have 9 to 10 million people already here, and we have hundreds of thousands who are drawn here like a magnet to a place where they know that their hopes and dreams can be realized.
Let's get another caller on the line. This is Solange, who's with us from Modesto, California.
Hello.
Hi.
Hi. This is my question. I'm an immigration attorney here in Modesto, and I have clients who frequently travel to Mexico, and when they come back, they simply go through the border checkpoint, and they just flash their document. They're not really checked when they cross by car. My question is this, and I've thought about this a lot. If you had someone flying from let's say, Spain into Mexico, what kind of measures is the Mexican government using to check the terrorist backgrounds of these people? Because it seems to me that they could come into Mexico and then attempt to drive across the border and, you know, appearing Hispanic, I think they could maybe get across.
Senator Cornyn?
Well, she's put her finger on a real vulnerability, and one that the United States government and the government of Mexico have been working very hard on in the last 3 years. It's not just people transiting through other countries and then driving or across our borders. It's people who obtain false documentation, for example, not even false documentation, authentic documentation, which is literally for sale in some countries, for example, as I was told recently, in Central America. But it's a tremendous problem. Now, that's why we have, are in the process of implementing the U.S. visit program, which will require a biometric identifier for every person who comes into the country, and it will also record when they leave. The big gap we have right now, though, is that if they don't leave, then we simply don't have the resources or the technology in place to find them, and they literally just melt into the landscape and become part of that mass of 9 or 10 million people who are here living outside of the law.
Solange, thanks very much for the phone call. And Senator Cornyn, thank you for your time today. We appreciate it.
Thank you, Neil.
Senator John Cornyn, Republican of Texas. More on border security after we come back from a break. I'm Neil Conan. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. Today we're talking about border security and transportation, what the 9/11 Commission recommends, what's being done, how it affects you. Join the conversation, 800-989-8255, or email us, TOTN@npr.org. Joining us now is Stephen Flynn, the author of America the Vulnerable, a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations. Good of you to be with us today.
I'm delighted to be with you, Neil.
I know you've been listening to what some of the other people on the program have been talking about. Obviously, government officials want to say, hey, look, we've done a lot since 9/11. The commission report says, look, there's a lot more to be done. If you had to prioritize, if you had to come down and say, you know, this is one or two or three things we can get done quickly, what would they be?
Well, one of the things that I focus on is cargo, is the stuff that comes across our borders in containers, trucks, trains, and ships. And right now we have very little capacity to know whether that's high risk or low risk, whether it poses a threat or not. And so focusing on that problem is important because this is the poor man's missile. that most in our intelligence agencies agrees this is a very high threat issue. Mm-hmm. But also there's solutions, and the solutions are things like going from what I call a dumb box, a container that doesn't know where it is and what's in it, to one that could use some basic technologies of tracking itself, like GPS, the kinds of things that are used in cars like OnStar, and also black box technology that could tell if somebody intruded or not, whether there's light or not that comes in. This would have cost. It would be at about $20 per shipment to the cost of containers. They come by the millions across our borders. But by knowing location and knowing integrity, we also serve a marketplace good, which is knowing where your merchandise is, the kind of things that many kids are doing when they order on the Internet. They can go check UPS, FedEx delivery and find out just where it's at. Well, that kind of thing doesn't exist for ships today. It doesn't exist for containers. So that makes this filtering the bad from the good problem at the border just so daunting. It's something we could rarely do, I think, in about a year's time. The technology is there. It's the choreography of getting people together. And it is a commitment at the public's policy level to getting on with the business of securing things that we previously didn't spend any time or energy and didn't give much capacity towards bolstering up. So that's one that screams out at me.
Mm-hmm. Earlier, Philip Zelikow was talking about the computer architecture that's going to be necessary to integrate all of this stuff. That is going to be a substantial expense and a lengthy period. These things don't get done quickly.
Well, they're not. I guess one concern that I lay out in this book that I've just done, as somebody who tracked this, I worked on this problem for the U.S. Commission on National Security, the Hot Rubin Commission, which pre-9/11, you know, warned that catastrophic terrorism was the number one challenge for our time and that we weren't structurally, as a government, we weren't structured to deal with it. We see now, of course, with the 9/11 Commission, similarly very reputable bipartisan folks 3 years after the fact saying virtually the same thing. And yet our war on terror has all largely been about the away game, the dealing with the problem as if we can manage it over there. And a simple number, Neil, I think sort of reflects the disconnect between thinking about the resource issues. The United States has 361 commercial seaports. They are the lifelines of our economy that connects us to the rest of the world. Those ports the federal government has made available since 9/11, 3 years, a total of $500 million in grants to begin to build some security from scratch. That's what we spend every 3 days in the war in Iraq. Now, this is not necessarily an either-or, but it shows that we're willing almost to spend unlimited resources when it's a war on terrorism overseas, but we're barely willing to invest in basic resources to protect things that are real value to us. Throughout the last hour, I think the listeners heard time and again the issue of resources. Well, we do. We're a very wealthy country. We can afford not only an offense, we could afford a defense if we focused our attention on it.
Let's take a call from Matt, who joins us from Scottsbluff, Nebraska.
Hello there.
Hi there.
I'm a Canadian citizen, transport commercial vehicle, and I have a privacy issue with this, with taking down fingerprints and that. And that is, both our countries look at it as innocent until proven guilty. Fingerprints are instant guilt in our mind's eye. And I would like to know. I'm a foreign citizen. I have no rights. I'm a guest in your state, in your country, and I'm proud of that. But what's to say, since I have no rights or anything like that down here, that my fingerprints aren't sold someplace in a clearinghouse? We have not fingerprint issues like that up in Canada, but your mail order stuff, they sell that stuff. And it's that concerns me. And because both our countries work better at the border. We need better...
Matt's question, there's going to be a lot more government intrusions, whether it's fingerprints or retinal scans or digitized photographs that are recognizable by computers. Is this inevitable, and how do we protect privacy?
Well, I think one of the things that's clear that you have to do, yes, some of this is inevitable. The government needs more capacity to filter the bad from the good than what it has today, which is virtually none. The issue is really that we see, it screams at us when we raise the civil liberty issue, that people don't have much trust with what government does with data. And so if you give government more authority, then you need to make sure you have greater accountability. I think one of my concerns with some of the post 9/11 legislation is that it both gave government more authority, but lowered the authority, the accountability threshold. You know, know, you need inspector generals. You need citizen oversights. You've got to make sure the stuff's not abused. But we are a nation of laws. And if you give government information bound by laws that people agree upon, that, and there's sanctions for violating that, then this notion of Big Brother intruding should be manageable. But here's a problem that citizens should keep in mind here that the government folks face as a retired Coast Guard officer. It's one, you're trying to ideally detect the terrorist or the criminal before they do something wrong. The other is if after the event, if we had a right after 9/11, if we recall, we didn't just ground airplanes. We closed our seaports and we effectively closed our borders with Canada and Mexico. And the reason why that we did that is because nobody in the federal government could have confidence that they could verify that low risk was low risk. Everything became suspicious. So if we don't find a means by which low-risk travelers, low-risk goods, low-risk trucks and trains and ships are, in fact, honest, good people, we end up overreacting when we have these events. So unless people think we're never going to have another terrorist attack, the government will never be faced with this conundrum, we have to begin to have a conversation about how do we give information to the folks who need it to do this job of dealing with the very real threat of terrorism on our soil by people intent on killing us and destroying things we value, but making sure that we don't sabotage our civil liberties. And the way we do that as a nation of laws is we build accountability, we build watchdog, we build checks and balances. It's the systems we have for dealing with safety, we have for dealing with the environment. These are all issues that potentially could slow down the marketplace. They have costs, but the public goods require these trade-offs. And I, one of my core arguments, though, is we're not having these kinds of conversations. What we're having a conversation is how the battle is going in Iraq, how the battle is going in Afghanistan. And I think the great service the 9/11 did, Commission has done for us, is to refocus our attention on the core realities of 9/11. The terrorists were here. They didn't import weapons of mass destruction. They used what we owned against us, the commercial airlines. And a lot of the consequences that have flowed, the costs, the slowdown of the economy, what we did to ourselves because we were spooked. And this failure to what I would argue an ounce of prevention, really is trying to safeguard things that we value. You can never be perfectly secure, but there's a lot that we can do to make these, just like moms can't guarantee their kids won't get hit by crooks, but we give them vaccinations. We try to feed them good. We make sure they get exercise. There are things that we can do to bolster the security, reduce the risk, the things that we really value. Are protected, and we're not making that investment yet because I would argue we're seduced into believing we can make this all go away if we can defeat terrorists overseas.
Stephen Flynn, thanks very much.
Thanks for having me.
Stephen Flynn, author of America the Vulnerable. He's a senior fellow at the Council on Foreign Relations and joined us from the studios at the Council on Foreign Relations. We were talking about border security. It's the first in a series of programs we're going to do on recommendations of the 9/11 Commission report. Certainly the idea of a national director of intelligence is getting a great deal of attention. We're going to be focusing on some of the less well-known or less popularly discussed recommendations of the 9/11 Commission over the next few weeks. If there's something that you've seen in the report that you would like to see discussed, send it to us. Our address is totn@npr.org. One more time, totn@npr.org. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News.